the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from a little cave on a tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened and a vision was revealed. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing in the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us, to some degree, it has always been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let us now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, and author of A Mother's Plea for the Winds Have Changed. Together, we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Winds of Change. I'm back here. I was going to say it means it's Tuesday. It's Wednesday. I'm confused. I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. And those of you who listen to Winds of Change know that Father Coy often appears on Wednesdays, right? But you would be wrong. Today's Tuesday. God love you for all your thoughts, your prayers, your gifts, your support, and your thoughts. You know, we don't have too many call-ins, but I hear a lot of people give me feedback, you know, in the live ways. You know, when they catch me, and I'm very glad for that, and I want you to keep doing that. Today is Tuesday, the day before. We're leaving for Washington, D.C. tomorrow. We, meaning our parish, there are thousands, millions of people will descend upon Washington, D.C. once more to stand up for the right to life, for the 42nd anniversary of the decision that made abortion legal. One of the most amazingly ignored, huge gatherings of humanity, and yet there's an effort to ignore it, and so we have to make a special effort to break the silence. Like that's about all you can say, you know. You just try to break the silence, and turn
make some noise there.
Yeah.
Make a lot of noise.
Yes. So perhaps we'll call in on Thursday. We'll be marching down Pennsylvania Avenue. And
we'll be cheering from the studio for you, if everybody.
From here.
From here.
You can join in a little bit.
Yes.
And Thursday, the show, of course, is noon to 1 o'clock here in Chicago, but Washington is an hour ahead of us.
So
we'll be marching along at that very hour and praying. You know, and just touching on that topic, I know so deeply that just hearing you, if you're listening to the radio and you're catching this show and maybe you're not sure what the show is all about and you hear the issues of the right to life and Roe v. Wade and everything, for so many it's a turnoff. So many people just are turned off. And I beg you, don't turn the channel because it's... maybe there'll be a little something new and a little something different that you haven't heard of. It's a turn on for many people, of course. Those who are interested for a very good reason, but those who are turned off are turned off. Let me tease perhaps those who are turned off because I'm going to play a part of an interview that Mike Wallace, a young Mike Wallace, had with Margaret Sanger, who's the founder of Planned Parenthood, who today, Planned Parenthood today is the largest abortion provider institution by far above all in the world today. And this is going back. The interview that I'm going to share with you is from 1957.
Wow.
The year I actually was born in, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
so little tyke. And she says some things that are so common today, but back then they were radical, you might say.
Sure.
even for Mike Wallace, who's not really a faithful follower of Catholicism, as far as I know, he's an, obviously not on 60 Minutes. He's one of the voices on 60 Minutes for many years. And so, but a tease for those who may be tempted to turn off the show, because she's saying something that I want to agree with. And there's something that Mike Wallace in the interview is trying to explain the Catholic position. And I believe that the way he explained it, I'm going to say this, is part of the problem. Part of the reason why we have such a big problem. I think it would have been a problem anyways, but it could have, it was not explained well enough. And in that, we needed John Paul II to come around and give us better wisdom than right at the beginning, shall we say. You know, and this was 1957, which was before Humanae Vitae came out. Well, but it was, I guess, you know, kind of building up towards it, you know. And so we're gonna go way back. I think this is a sort of a go back into history. Nicholas, can we set the Wayback Machine, if at all possible?
Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
Well, that would be 1957.
That's it. Don't ask how I got my voice that high.
Tony, you did a very fine job.
Thank you.
So Bob. Talented, Tony.
Thank you.
Exactly. Well, let's play that. Nicholas, if you could cue us up, because I'm going to, if you can stop it when I stop it. I have a rather long clip here, but I want to play a little and stop a little and comment on it. By and large, because on this eve of the March for Life, I really want us to take a stronger and deeper look at this root, a root cause of the abortion issue is the human sexuality issue. And we don't get human sexuality right, then we cover our track, so to speak. And abortion, unfortunately, is that covering of the track, our tracks. And I don't think hardly any church has done nearly enough in trying to expose what I want to expose today here in what can really be seen as the beginning stages of what we have today. It started with this birth control movement by Margaret Sanger, but it, you don't want to say blossom because that gives you the feeling of a flower, but I don't know, it exploded into the abortion rights. And now, consequentially, we're another step farther along the same path as the same-sex marriage issue of the day. So, Nicholas, at the beginning, Mike Wallace does talk about where the opposition she has coming. So let's play that, and then I'll cut it off in a minute or so.
You say that originally the opposition was in all law, and you have to fight against that. Today, your opposition stems mainly from where? From what source?
Well, I think that the opposition is mainly from the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church.
Of the Church. Well, now, of the hierarchy of the Church. You feel that the parishioners themselves, the lay people in the Church, are not against birth control.
I feel they come to all of our clinics just the same as the non-Catholics do. Exactly the same.
Well, let's look at the official Catholic position. Okay. Opposition to birth control. I read now from a church publication called The Question Box.
Can you pause it right there?
Birth control, it says
can you stop it? Because I want to pick up there. At the beginning, she's making a point that I don't think is, well, it's sort of an obvious one now. She is saying that the Catholics versus non-Catholics come to their...
You say birth. That originally the opposition was in all law. And you have
Can you cut... Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, a little technical difficulties there, but this is a challenge for. What was I?
The non-Catholics and the Catholics.
The non-Catholics, yes. And the Catholics. She's right, in a sense.
You
that
see that
Catholics and non-Catholics have kind of rejected the official Catholic Church's teaching. And I always like to say here, but he, I always like to use the phrase artificial contraception instead of birth control. They use the word birth control, and that's the popular phrase. But I see there's a huge, huge difference. If you can catch yourself, and maybe you who are listening to this broadcast can say it, and I know I've slipped myself at times, you know, because birth control captures the idea in one way, but it misses the idea that the Catholic Church has a sanctioned view form of birth control, namely natural family planning. Mm-hmm. And that is a form of birth control, which springs from the ability to know the fertility cycle, and through periodic abstinence, the couple does avoid a pregnancy at certain times by not engaging in the marital act at those times. So, and now you could even say, priests, I practice birth control in the sense that I embrace celibacy. Sure. And it's not evil not to do something that is a good thing, but by not participating in marital relationships, as many people are not married, obviously, you know, Christine, you're a single mm-hmm. woman, and yes. you practice with me the same this virtue.
Yeah, birth control, yes.
And so
abstinence.
Yeah, yeah, and it's though there's the door. If your Prince Charming came along, you know, you may
get married.
You might keep that door open, yes. that window open. That's a perfectly wonderful and legitimate mm-hmm. Stand in life.
Sure.
So, but anywho, that's he uses the word birth control, and I caution our listeners. I caution myself. Please beware of the distinction between the word artificial contraception and birth control, because natural family planning is a perfectly wonderful form of birth control, though it's so accurate that it can be misused and abused, and can be used in selfish ways. And that's mm-hmm. that's the key phrase that the church wants us to keep in mind. God wants us to keep it in mind. Don't be selfish in all your areas of life, and in this area of life particularly. So anyways, that was the introduction. Now what we're going to hear is Mike Wallace trying to explain the Catholic Church's position. And again, I don't want to blame him, because he probably just got it from a book somewhere. He's repeating what he learned and studied. And I would have to add, too, the great vast majority of all people throughout the world, and especially here in the United States, when they heard the church's position, there was a little bit of the reaction that Margaret Sanger has toward Mike Wallace. So let's go from there, Nick. Where are we at?
Is the begetting of children. When the marital relation is so used as to render the fulfillment of its purposes impossible, that is by birth control, it is used unethically and unnaturally. Now, what's wrong with that position?
Well, it's very wrong. It's not normal. It's not, it has the wrong attitude toward marriage, toward love, toward the relationships between men and women.
Well, the natural law, they say, is that first of all, the primary function of sex in marriage is to beget children. Do you disagree with that?
I disagree with 100%.
Your feeling is what?
My feeling is love and the attraction between men and women, in many cases, the very finest relationship, has nothing to do with bearing a child. It's secondary. Men.
Okay. Let's
very
stop
selfish.
Wow. Well, it's very selfish, but that's the basic thinking of the American mm-hmm. mind today. She has succeeded. She has won her case almost hands down, you know, today. But let's pick apart a bit of what she's saying. Here's the strange way. I want to criticize the critical point I want to bring out, critical of the way Mike Wallace is explaining the official Catholic position, because we didn't have John Paul II yet. We it was new territory for Pope Paul VI when he issued Humanae Vitae, and it was new territory for everybody in that sense. New in the sense that it was new on the modern scene, not new in the sense that debates about human sexuality have been going on since time immemorial. But how do you say it right? How do you say it well? And that's here's what I want to say is that the position, the answer he's giving is faulty in this regard. He says the immediate purpose and primary end of marriage is the begetting of children. Now, I'm going to take a risk by saying I don't know if I completely accept the idea of primary purpose versus secondary purpose. Obviously, if there's a primary, there's a secondary. If there's a first-place winner, there's a second-place winner in a race with more than one person, of course. And I know we've said it. I've probably said it. I know I've heard many wonderful and good people, especially trying to defend the church's position on it. And those priests that I know do defend it, or catechists and different teachers and what have you. That phrase is what I want to focus on here today. The primary purpose or the primary end of marriage is the beginning of children. Now, I don't think you can... You've got to analyze one or two things here. Marriage, then... The word marriage is obviously almost used as a substitute for sex between man and woman. And so the idea of marriage that is so united to the idea of the man-woman relationship, the intimate relationship of man-woman, is a purpose, the begetting of children. That's the only way children come about in the world. It is a fundamental purpose of marriage. But what I want to raise the question to, raise, and I don't know that I've done this much before, but on this show today I'm going to do it.
Go for it, Father.
I want to raise the question, is the word primary the right word? Or can we use a different word? I believe using the word primary is part of our problem because it then offsets, it makes you think of secondary. And obviously, the secondary meaning or purpose, which Margaret Sanger is trying to hold on to and trying to lift up, and everybody recognizes it, as I would and the Pope would, and everybody does. But the bringing together of two people, the man and the woman, in what we could call the marital embrace, friendship, love, unity. What Humanae Vitae so beautifully says, as Pope Blessed Paul VI writes, is that it's there are two purposes, the unitive and procreative. Obviously, procreative meaning begetting children, unitive meaning it brings two people together in a deep and a powerful way, and so I really think we got to analyze this a little mm-hmm. bit more, kick it around, because I want to make a comparison to our Thanksgiving dinners. Okay, I'm gonna bring the turkey and the Thanksgiving dinner into this conversation on Margaret Sanger. If you don't know how I'm going to do that, you're just going to stay and wait for a few more minutes until we come back from this break. I'm Father Tom Coyce, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Winds of Change broadcasts from the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy at the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, located two blocks north off Division on Noble at the Division Street exit off the Kennedy. Since 1867, St. Stanislaus Kostka Church has been serving the faithful of Chicagoland since 1867. With your help, St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, can continue its mission to bring Christ to His people. please donate now by going to sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org. That's sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org. And click on the donations link to make a secure donation with a major credit card or debit card. With your help, St. Stanislaus Koska, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy will continue its restoration and will continue to thrive for the body of Christ. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Mysticism, it keeps men sane. So said G.K. Chesterton, the famous thinker and writer of the 20th century. Hello, I am Father Thomas J. Loya with an Eastern Christian Moment. Christian mysticism actually means that which is most real. The mystical reveals and conceals all at the same time. It is life lived in the tension of paradox. God is three distinct persons, yet one God. He is the righteous judge and the lover of mankind. We come to know God precisely by that which we do not know about him. Mysticism forms part of the particular genius of the Eastern Catholic churches. Our church art and architecture are designed to reveal heaven and to conceal heaven, to give us an experience of heaven meeting earth. God is both transcendent and immanent all at the same time. He is uncontainable and infinite, yet was contained within the womb of a virgin. The elaborate and solemn liturgical services of the Eastern Catholic churches provide for the worshiper a sublime experience of what keeps us all sane, mysticism. To find out more about the Eastern Log of the Church, go to easternchristianmedia.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coy sitting in here on a Tuesday. A very wonderful change of pace for me. But glad you're listening. And the reason I'm here is because our parish is heading off for Washington, D.C. tomorrow for the March for Life. And it's kind of sad that so many thousands, if not a million people will be there and nobody will even know about it. Those who, it just passes by. So I'm trying to drive home a point about getting to the root of the issue. And that is the controversy of birth control is what it comes down to. The controversy, and as I said before the break, of artificial contraception versus natural family planning, which is a good form of birth control, shall we say. So we were listening to some of Margaret Sanger's words with an interview that she gave to Mike Wallace back in 1957. And notice that she said, when she was trying to talk about the primary purpose of marriage, she said the attraction of men and women, man to woman. She didn't even consider man to man or woman to woman. You know, it wasn't on her radar screen. But the theory and the principle and the new attitude toward the marital embrace brought about the same-sex marriage issue of today. Now, a lot of listeners or a lot of people will say, what's wrong with that? She did a good thing to demonize the Catholic Church and its teaching against artificial contraception. And now it's good that others are demonizing the Catholic Church, as well as many other Christian churches, of course, in our attempt to defend the definition of marriage between a man and a woman. So I found that interesting that she just said men versus women. And she says, in many cases, the finest relationships have nothing to do with bearing a child. It's secondary. It's secondary. Okay, now, this is where we got to focus in on, my friends. Mm-hmm. Mike Wallace, using the language of the church, used the word primary for the procreative aspect of the marital embrace. She's calling it secondary. And what would she say is primary is the friendship, the spiritual love between a man and a woman. And if she were alive today, I'm sure she would say a man and a man are in the same exact situation. But the whole point of my show today, if I could get this across, and I'm going to try to repeat it a few times, is that human sexuality being at the center so much of our lives, and that act, I use the phrase marital embrace because it's a good way to talk about it and sure. to keep children in some way in the mysterious cloud of childhood, which is a good thing. But there are many aspects of it, and the two basic ones are procreative and unitive. And I just use the word basic, but I'd like to use the word fundamental. But what I didn't say was primary and mm-hmm. secondary. And this is where I want to bring mm-hmm. Thanksgiving dinner in.
Bring in Big Bird.
Got to bring in Big Bird. And I'm sure you've all had wonderful Thanksgiving dinners, right? Here in America, it mostly is turkey, the Big Bird. But a lot of people, you could. It doesn't matter if it's something else or not. My point right. is still the same. The fact is that if I conjure up the idea of a Thanksgiving dinner in your mind, and I were to say the primary purpose of that Thanksgiving dinner is to fill your stomachs and to starve off starvation or to wade off starvation, you'd find that strange, wouldn't mm-hmm. you? It just doesn't sound right.
Because you need, it's both.
Both what?
Both what you just said. not primary or secondary. Yeah, I like what you said. It's fundamental.
Well, and the first thing, mm-hmm. The first thing I said was fill your stomach. Mm-hmm. But what's the other purpose?
Bringing
the family together. Mm-hmm. The wonderful camaraderie, the joy. If Thanksgiving could be done without food, you know, I suppose you'd still want to call it Thanksgiving if everyone got together and prayed, for instance. Mm-hmm. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Give thanks.
There's different things that doesn't necessarily have to be the primary, the secondary. It's just there's many reasons.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and they're fundamental. Mm-hmm. The point I'm trying sure. to, these are a fundamental part. Fundamental purpose of the Thanksgiving dinner is friendship, is unity within the family. However, there's food. Now, any doctor or anyone studying from a scientific method would say, obviously, the primary purpose of food is to feed the body the nutrition it needs to stay alive. You know, that's... And so what I'm critical of here, mm-hmm. and what I want to try to help people understand and see is that the better defense of the church's position is not what Mike Wallace was saying, but what John Paul II says in his Theology of the Body, where he readily admits there's a beauty to the unitive dimension. Mm-hmm. of the marital embrace. And even like Margaret Sanger says, there's a lot of good marriages that don't have anything to do with a child. And that's true, of course. But if you're saying marriage in the sense of this man living with this woman for their whole life and then just look at the relationship, yes. But then when you talk about the act, mm-hmm. the physical act, if you are going to say the physical act has nothing to do with the begetting of children, then you're attacking. You're not just ignoring. You have to be poo-pooing. Mm. And she even says it by calling the procreative side secondary. I want to say, please don't call one primary and please mm-hmm. don't call one secondary. Let us call them both fundamental. And so therefore, you have to respect both of them. And I'm a little afraid that little insight is very unknown or is not appreciated. And I don't know of anyone really even saying it today, but I'm saying it today. And I want you to think about this issue because I think it can help us, how do I say, gain support for Catholicism in its fullness. I think that there's a lot of Catholics who have kind of rejected the church's teaching because they're agreeing with Margaret Sanger. And in their mind, they want to put the unitive ahead of, as the primary purpose, of the marital act and call the procreative side secondary or tertiary, third, fourth, or even dispensable. It can be dispensable. And, of course, in order to make it dispensable, you have to intervene with something artificial. And that's where we're dealing with the artificial contraception. So I'd like to listen to a little bit more because there's a wonderful modern-day philosopher by the name of John Finnis that I think has just a great insight into this sticky problem, this sticky problem. Let's go a little farther, Nick. Where we left off, can you take it? See if you can find where we left off. Let me see. Okay, I'm going to keep on talking here and see if Nick can find that. let's see. What John Finnis is contributing into this quagmire, shall we say, call it a quagmire. He has a beautiful way of defending natural law, and he has a phrase called the incommensurate goods, basic human values. He bases his moral thinking and
you say,
national. My mind is getting.
There's a quagmire.
The quagmire, yes. Yeah. In establishing ethical principles, you need to establish intrinsic basic human values. Or he'll even use the phrase basic human values instead of intrinsic values. What is an intrinsic or basic human value? Something that is good, that is good and valuable in and of itself, not because of a motivation or not because of using it for something else, that it is important to get down to a human value that is wonderful in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Now, he says, as you took all the things we argue about, all the things we talk about, he boils them down to seven. There are seven basic human values, basic human goods. I think he would want us to use the word goods as opposed to a value. I like the language of good versus values. You know, we say values all the time, but values, the word values in and of itself, I think, is too easily relativized because something is valuable for me is not valuable for you. If I like baseball, a good baseball mitt is valuable. If you don't like baseball, then a good baseball mitt is valueless. But we're looking for things that are good in and of themselves, that universally human beings will all tip their hat and say, yes, that is a good that I want. Where, of course, many times people will say, I don't want a baseball glove because I have no interest in that wonderful thing. So, but the seven basic ones are life, knowledge, play, beauty, friendship, practical reasonableness. I like that one. Mm-hmm. And seventh, religion. Let me repeat that again. Think of anything in all the arguments, all the issues that we kick around in politics or in homeland, relationships and all that. These are things that are self-evident, to borrow Thomas Jefferson's phrase from the American Declaration of Independence, that life is a basic value. It's better to be alive than dead. Do you have to argue with somebody? Why do you want to be alive, you know? Well, or knowledge is a basic value. It's good to know, learn things. Is it better to, why do you want to know that? I'd rather be in ignorance, you know? So knowledge, play. Not too many people have a hard time accepting that one. Everyone enjoys some recreation and play time. Beauty, you know, beauty is something that we all seek and can appreciate. Beauty might be a little different for one or the other, but the sense of beauty is universal. Friendship or sociability You know, why do you need friends? You know, do you need friends for something else? No, the friendship itself is what you're after. Practical reasonableness, just the way to be able to discuss and argue and figure things out. Wouldn't that be a basic human value? And lastly, religion. There's something in the human being that needs to discover where he came from, where he's going, and all that, or religion, and the development of a relationship with the divine, you know. So those are his basic human values. So what we got to pay attention to and apply this theory to the right to life issue, the humanae vitae issue, is this theory that he calls the incommensurability of human goods. So let's read, Nicholas, if you can, let's go a little bit farther with Margaret Sanger, and as she tries to explain herself and gets to other hot water issues.
I disagree with 100%.
Your feeling is what?
My feeling is love and the attraction between men and women, in many cases, the very finest relationship, has nothing to do with bearing a child. It's secondary. Many times, and we know that, you see, your birth rate, you talk to people who have very happy marriages, and they're not having babies every year. Yes, I think that's a celibate attitude.
Purely. A celibate attitude, but you agree that Catholicism, according to the tenets of Catholicism, they rule that birth control violates not only the church's position, it isn't the church's position, but they say that it violates a natural law, as I have just explained. Therefore, birth control is a sin, no matter who practices it. Now, the violation of the natural law, according, you certainly can take no issue with the natural law as the hierarchy of the Catholic Church regards it.
Well, I certainly do take issue with it. I think it's untrue, and I think it's unnatural.
Okay, there she says another mouthful. And
the way she says it, the tone of voice, it's like what this...
Well, yeah.
And the tone has a lot to do also.
But remember, her ideas have won. Her tone may have been a little nasty or rebellious or something, but her ideas have won. That's the modern mind, shall we say. And I want to focus on, even Mike Wallace, I'm sure Mike Wallace would not be defending natural law the way he was back in 1957. Namely, moral principles come from nature, not constitutions. Or right and wrong comes from an understanding of human nature that we don't make, but we discover, not at all from a hierarchy of political figures who declare what is right and wrong, shall we say, willy-nilly, or shall we say, whatever other purposes they are trying to achieve. Let's go to another break because there's so much more I think we need to unpack and deal with this issue. I know it's I'm swimming in water with sharks, but we do that here at the Winds of Change, and we pray and we hope. I think we're doing a whole lot of good to help people focus and straighten out what is crooked. We find a delight and a beauty in the truth that is so often maligned and ridiculed. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
You've heard us say that Winds of Change is listener-supported. That means you help us stay on the air with your dollars and your prayers. And we are asking for that help now. Please take a moment and go to our website, windsofchangeshow.com. That's windsofchangeshow.com. On the upper right-hand side of the page, there is a link, Support Winds of Change Show. Click on that link and donate securely with any major credit card. With your help, Winds of Change will continue to bring you the truth. The Winds of Change. On AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com. Winds of Change broadcasts from the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy at the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Church, located two blocks north off Division on Noble at the Division Street exit off the Kennedy. Since 1867, St. Stanislaus Kostka Church has been serving the faithful of Chicagoland since 1867. With your help, St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, can continue its mission to bring Christ to His people. Please donate now by going to sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org. That's sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org. And click on the donations link to make a secure donation with a major credit card or debit card. With your help, St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, will continue its restoration and will continue to thrive for the body of Christ.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Hope you're staying with us on this challenging topic we're talking about today. But
Here you go.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
How did he know?
That's our purpose here.
I just read Tony's mind.
Yep.
Some people were born to run. I was born to wrinkle people's brains. That's why.
Totally wrinkled.
Yeah. And I... The reward door.
The reward door.
Who opened the reward door?
Yeah. Because when you wrinkle your brain, then that's you're gaining the access to true knowledge.
Okay. That's beautiful.
Sensei. Thank you, Sensei, Christina.
Good. I'm trying to connect one of my favorite philosophers, a modern day philosopher by the name of John Finnis, with this sticky issue we're dealing with. And I'm calling it a sticky issue in the attempt to try to draw people into this discussion who may think they have it all settled, especially if they have it all settled against the church. I know a lot of our listeners probably have accepted what our church, the Catholic Church, speaks about here. And so calling it a sticky issue, you might want to say, it's not a sticky issue. It's open. The church has spoken, and I accept, mm-hmm. and I go on, you know. And I say, more power to you, and God bless you. But what I'm trying to do is, by calling it a sticky issue, I'm saying, you know, well, there's understandable. There are people who are disagreeing with some interesting mm-hmm. reasons, some of which have some validity. However, the conclusions they make and then the life that is lived becomes the problem. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Because what it comes down to, my basic point again today is I want to get us to think about the two ends of the marital embrace, meaning procreative and unitive. There's nobody, as far as I know, that is... Well, I might even have to take this sentence back, but I want to say there's nobody I know who's arguing against the church's belief that the marital embrace has a unitive dimension to it, you know, that brings people together. Everybody mm-hmm. knows that, except to show how bad things have gotten. I think some people might even, when you define unitive as the coming together of two persons, mm-hmm. and you want to say united for life, if you just add that little phrase, this brings two people together for life. Well, you get a lot of people to object to that part of it because they say, you hook up, and the hookup culture, that phrase, the hookup yes. culture, certainly would stand against that meaning. You know, it's not, well, it's unitive for a little while, you know, mm-hmm. but it's not unitive in any extended sense, you know. Mm-hmm. You don't have to know the person's name that you're sleeping with. You yeah. know, it might be good, but...
Because you know, they turn the sacred of marriage is sacred, that the sacred bond, that love, they turn it into something superficial and it's just all about pleasure.
It's about pleasure. Well, even a little bit more than that, it goes... Remember one of those mm-hmm. basic human values, they put it into the category of play.
Yeah, like a game or...
It's just, recreation.
Yeah, recreational. There you go.
It's recreational. And sometimes that phrase is even used, you know, in reference to...
I have a problem with what she said. It's unnatural. It's just Margaret Sanger when she stated that having babies every year, that that's unnatural. And I think both, you know, like you said, Father, there's the primary and secondary. We're not going to say that, because when two people come together and they're in love and they embrace the marriage, then they're open to life. Mm-hmm. You can't say, and I'm not saying that, you know, marriage is just, like he said, the primary point of marriage is just having, it's not like a machine having babies and all that. It's both, you know. Mm-hmm. One, she only, she stops at that, at the point that she was trying to make, is that the couple is just there to love each other and that's it. I find that selfish.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, just saying that it's just all about having, you need both.
Yeah. People will use the phrase, I think even Pope Francis used it recently, by saying having children like rabbits,
uh-huh.
You know.
And it's not even that, because couples are, because they're open to life, and that's why they,
yeah,
that's a gift. Life is, it's a gift.
Well, if you have to be against something, you know, to be death, you got to be absence of life.
Right.
So in order to get her agenda across, mm-hmm. you know, she's got to take that, you know, well, it's death. Why should I have babies every year? It's obvious in her speaking. And that's what I'm picking up on those little things, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and the reason I want to use this clip is because I don't want to just pick on her, because mm-hmm. she's out of the picture now. But it's the ideas.
The mm-hmm. ideas.
That have been completely embraced by most of the modern world today. And so that idea, okay, you don't want to have children like rabbits. I'd like to say, though, coming from a big family, I have seven brothers and sisters, but I don't want to accuse my mom and dad of having children like rabbits, although somebody who only had one or two children will definitely accuse them mm-hmm. of it. And you can see how slippery and how inaccurate, how poor of a moral principle that is. And of course, nobody, even parents with many, many children, they don't look at themselves as having children like rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbits are animals, and a large family is different.
It's a blessing. I know that somebody that one of our parishioners, they come from a large family. I think there's eight of them, and they have the family pictures, and on at the bottom they said, "Count your blessings."
Yeah, yeah,
it's a blessing.
It's a huge. Now, the church doesn't say you have to have so X number of children. It never has, and it never will. But going back to a principle by which you evaluate the moral good or evil of an act. That's what we're concentrating on here, and that's what's lost in this. I'm so passionate about helping people come to good moral principles in the midst of many things. And the moral principle that is underlined today is this, what John Finnis talks about, the incommensurability of some basic human values. Now, the marital embrace mm-hmm. is definitely involved mm-hmm. too. Or you could even say, again, life, knowledge, play, beauty, friendship, practical reasonableness, and religion. You could almost say
that's
the marital embrace includes all
of them,
those,
yes.
You know?
That's right.
Obviously, life, it brings life. Play, there is a certain element of joyful play. Beauty, obviously. Mm-hmm. Knowledge, even the word know is biblical for the marital embrace. Friendship. It tones your idea. If you get this issue correct, and that I mean embracing the Catholic position on that, you will have better practical reason. You will. Mm-hmm. You will. And your faith will make so much more sense. There's so many reasons why we could say that. But what's so important is to see that these goods are not supposed to be ranked one on top of each other. Like, this is the most important, and mm-hmm. that's the next most important. Like the difference between play and knowledge. They're both good things of life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one means if you want more knowledge, you go to the library or sure. do research on the internet these days. Or you still can go to the library. Libraries are still nice places. But anyways, you focus on education. The good of play, you got to get some people together and play a game and mm-hmm. enjoy something together.
Get and take a break. But, the time for everything.
Right. Now sometimes taking a break from study is you go out and play. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people who live by playing football or something, they need to take a break from their play sure. and do some studying right. you know, or something else. But anyways, you don't... The genius of John Finnis, which comes from Aristotle and Thomas Aquinas especially, but he has the most beautiful way of expressing it in the modern world today. He was from Oxford, actually, and then Notre Dame, University of Notre Dame picked him up, and I think he's retired now. I'm not even sure if he's alive still or not. I think the Lord may have called him home. But if you have one act that involves these things, you have to be very careful so that you don't ruin that one act so that you're attacking one or the other. And the example I often use when trying to make the Catholic position on artificial contraception reasonable to people is the example of eyeglasses. I always like to use the example of eyeglasses because nobody's against eyeglasses. Most of us wear them, you know, but it's an invention of science. And the pill, the birth control pill, is seen in the same light as eyeglasses because it's a human invention to help us achieve a good. Eyeglasses obviously are a human invention to help us achieve the good of seeing. And if we want to relate that to John Finnis's 7 basic human values, beauty would, you know, you need your eyes to see beauty. You also need your eyes to learn knowledge if you're reading and blah, blah, blah. You need it to play a good game and hit a baseball the right way, et cetera. So the human invention of eyeglasses is contributing to that one basic human value. And it's not attacking any of the others. In fact, it helps the others. It's primarily about one, but it helps the others. Where the birth control pill is not like a set of eyeglasses because it's a human invention hoping to advance a human good. And in this sense, in taking Margaret Sanger's way of thinking or the American way of thinking, you know, she'd say, well, it helps play, the virtue of play. Obviously, people need recreation and there's a great deal of pleasureful joy in that marital play, shall we say. And in that, the Catholic Church wants to say, okay, that's fine, but wait a minute. In doing the contraceptive way, you are attacking one of the other basic human values of life. You are attacking the procreative side, and that is where children come from. God designed it. That's the only way. You don't even have to bring mm-hmm. God into the picture. That's the only way new children come into the world. Mm-hmm. So the contraceptive pill, instead of it being like eyeglasses, is like... maybe sticking a needle in your eye, in a sense, you know. You're going to, if you say, you go to the ophthalmologist and say, doc, I'm having trouble seeing, can you give me some help? And he punches you in the eye, puts his finger in your eye. You say, that didn't help.
No, trying to wake up the eye, but it's not working.
Yeah. But he says something like, well, I get a big kick out of that. You know, I enjoy seeing people's reactions, you know, because it's my part of my play. I get pleasure from that or what have you. And it's attacking the good of sight. Mm-hmm. And the artificial contraception is attacking the good of the procreative power of man and woman. And that's exactly what is at root at the gay marriage issue, too. It's taking the marital embrace and destroying it altogether. But in the gay marriage side, it's a permanent destruction. On the heterosexual couple that practices artificial contraception, they're doing it on a temporary basis. And so it's quite important to not attack one of the basic human values. And there's something you can't, you can't line them up one on top of another. Remember the movie Sophie's Choice, of course. Maybe that was a long time ago, but there was a movie about a mother in the concentration camps in World War II, Nazi Germany, and she was forced to pick between one of her kids. One of her kids she was going to get saved, and the other kid was going to go to the gas chamber, and she had to make the choice. You know, which one are you going to take? You know, it's like, how can you possibly tell a mother to choose between her two children, you know? Now, I'm sure there may be some mothers out there that are thinking, hey, I got a good idea which one I get rid of. But I'm talking about, you know, the right.
And most mothers would say, well, you know what? Just take me instead of the other.
Well, exactly.
Save both and take me.
Yeah. Because this theory of the incommensurability of goods, where you don't want to rank them one on top of each other, but you have to respect them all, it does lead you into some difficult situation. You may be thrown into a situation by someone evil, shall we say, that will force you to choose. Let's say you are one of this your friendship versus knowledge. Let's say, okay, two basic knowledge. And sometimes your pursuit of knowledge may hurt your friendship. Let's say you have a good friend, friends that always gather around a football game, but you want to become a doctor, you want to become a lawyer, you want to go into something that requires a lot of study, you're going to have to sacrifice some sociability, you know, and I think everybody experiences that at times, for the sake of knowledge. You don't attack your friendship, but you do have to choose, and that's and choosing one over the other is not the problem. It's doing something whereby you attack the other. It's not just a neglect of the other. The non-pursuit of a good is not wrong. The attacking of a good is wrong. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
And that's what we have. And it's interesting that in looking at the incommensurability of goods, I found this little article by, oh dear, there's the music.
Wow.
We're going to have to come
to
back
to be continued.
Again, to be continued, because it's an interesting example from the field of pricing things in market research, of all things, which uses this very same principle that's found in Aristotle. God bless you for listening. I hope this helped in ways to keep you strong in the faith. God love you. I'm Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You've been listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed. To say